Welcome to another podcast in our series for the International Chamber of Commerce UK branch. This is ICC's World Business Podcast, recorded in London on the 14th of July 2017. I'm Alex Abaratney and I'm here with Shankar Singham, Chairman of the Legatum Institute's Special Trade Commission, which seeks to present a roadmap for trade negotiations in the wake of the UK's decision to exit the EU. It's just over a month after the general election, and we've seen politicians debating the type of arrangements for the UK in the event that we leave the EU without a trade deal. Shankar, given that you're an advocate for the free trade option and the harder Brexit that entails, can you offer UK business some comfort as to why this approach is a good option for the UK? Why shouldn't we remain in a single market or customs union, for instance?
First of all, thanks, Alex. I think the issue of hard or soft Brexit isn't a particularly helpful way of looking at things. I think there's either going to be a good Brexit or a bad Brexit. And in order to determine a good Brexit, what we need to do is figure out what are the opportunities here. Opportunities are basically from having an independent trade policy. So your independent trade policy means you have to be able to do things unilaterally, improve your own regulatory environment, lower tariffs in certain areas where you need to, in order, for example, to lower food price inflation and that sort of thing. Improve, you know, intermediate goods tariffs, those sorts of things. And you also need to be able to work bilaterally, trade agreements with other countries, including the agreement with the EU. Plurilaterally, agreements with like-minded countries, so we're talking about things like accession to larger trading arrangements that the UK may be able to engage in. And then multilaterally in the WTO, not only our rectification process as a WTO member, but also taking a leadership role in services liberalisation, which is incredibly important to our economy, with 80% of our economy is services. Most of the barriers in services are regulatory barriers, behind the border barriers. We've made very little progress on those in international fora. And so making progress in the WTO and in global standard setting organisations for more pro-competitive regulations. So all of those things taken together, that's your independent trade policy. So what you have to do when you leave the EU in order to have a good Brexit is to say, well, what do I need to do in order to achieve as much of that as is possible? Well, what I need to do is, first of all, in order to do the unilateral changes that you need to do, you need to have control over your tariff schedules and you need to have control over your domestic regulation, because that's what countries negotiate with, and that's if you want to improve your domestic regulatory situation, you need to make sure you have control over it. In order to do trade deals, in order to be an active member of the WTO, in order to accede to plurilateral arrangements, you need those two things. Now, unfortunately, with respect to disruption, that means you can't be in the customs union, because if you're in the customs union, you don't have control over your tariff schedules, and you can't be in the EEA, the single market, because you don't have control over your domestic regulation. So what we need to then do is figure out how we minimise those disruptions that come from leaving the customs union and the EEA, and determine how we can minimise those disruptions. And it's critical that as you minimise those disruptions, you don't take opportunities off the table.
Thank you, Shankar. That's really insightful. So we've talked about disruptions, but what about the opportunities presented from this approach to Brexit?
Well, if you look at the opportunities, and we're sort of evaluating what it means to have a unilateral, make these unilateral changes, join, you know, plurilateral agreements and so forth. The 80% of the UK economy is services. Most of those services barriers are domestic regulatory barriers. They're what we call anti-competitive market distortions around the world. If you're able, through your independent trade policy, to lower these distortions year on year by, let's say, 2 or 3% per year, which is a fairly conservative estimate based on this policy, we think that significantly adds to UK GDP. So UK GDP is growing at about 1.9% a year. We think you can add anything between 0.7 and 1.5% to that number year on year if you're able to do these things. So it's quite a significant improvement to the UK economy.
I mean, you've already touched on it, but what about these disruptions from a lack of transitional arrangements in place, such as tariffs, complex customs procedures, and a lack of access for financial services? Surely this is going to be quite significant.
So you look at those opportunities and you say, well, either it's, you know, we're growing at 1.9%, maybe we could be growing at 2.9% or whatever. So that's the opportunity, that's the number we've got to keep on the table. Now, we can't be in the customers union, can't be the EEA. Now, what can we do in the interim? Let's assume we come out of the EU in March 2019 without a final, you know, comprehensive free trade agreement, which is what both sides, the UK and the EU, both sides have said they want. We need to have some interim measures on the way to a free trade agreement. And those interim measures are things like a zero-for-zero tariff deal, which is completely WTO compatible. You can do that for 3 years, let's say. You need to have mutual recognition of product regulation between the UK and the EU. Again, we will have ported over all European regulation through the repeal bill, so there won't be any reason for either the UK or the EU not to mutually recognise each other's product regulation. You need to agree rules of origin that make sense. And the European rule of origin is already substantial transformation or change in tariff classification. So as long as that's in place, then European importers or European customs agents know that product coming in from the UK, as long as it's changed tariff classification, counts as UK origin product. And then on the customs clearance side, we need to develop expedited mechanisms. So these are things like trusted trader programs, authorised economic operator programs. So the UK needs to have one, Europe already has one, and they need to mutually recognise each other. So that's another aspect of this. Every single one of those things are things that European Union businesses will want as much, if not more than, UK businesses. Probably more, because unfortunately one of the things that this whole process has thrown up is the fact that UK businesses don't really export. I mean, we have a very low level of exports. You know, 20% of tradable business firms are actually exporting anywhere. That's bad. We need to improve that number. But certainly it means that for European businesses, for whom more export and more export to the UK, they will need to have these measures. And so I think that on the customs union side, the mitigants for coming out of the customs union should be relatively easily accomplished. On the EEA side, coming out of the EEA, this is basically domestic regulation. You need to have arrangements that either recognise, coordinate regulatory arrangements on both sides of the channel. So we've put forth a proposal on financial services, which is essentially a dual regulatory coordination mechanism where you recognise the home state supervision of the other country. And I think those kinds of proposals apply also to things like life sciences, to digital, to some of these other areas. So you need a series of those kinds of measures. And on things like aviation and so forth, you will likely have flanking agreements coming out of the EU, because again, with every single one of these measures, these are things that European industry and European business will want, again just as much as the UK. And since the UK has basically said and telegraphed, I think, to people that we want to have these kinds of measures, if I'm a European business and I need those kinds of measures, my strategy will be not to lobby London, because you already know London agrees with you. My strategy will be to pick up the phone to Michel Barnier and demand that we need these things in order to survive. And I'm sure European businesses will do that.
And with all of this going on, how can businesses best prepare for any changes in the trading environment?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the first things that businesses do is figure out what it is they need. Unfortunately, I think a lot of, on the UK side, a lot of UK business lobbying in the last year, sort of after the referendum, has very much been going to the government and complaining this is all a disaster and this is how many jobs are going to be lost, which doesn't really help the government. I mean, there's not much they can really do with that. What government needs to hear from business is, here's what I need in Europe. I export this product. I need to make sure there are no barriers in this product. That kind of information is extremely useful for negotiators, and I think it's beginning to be submitted now to government, but it's a pity that it wasn't submitted a year ago when it could have been. But I think more than that, if you identify what you need, And clearly what business needs is not a big, it's not rocket science. I mean, they need a free trade agreement ultimately, and they need a lot of the transitional measures or interim measures that we talked about. Once you've defined what you need, then you need to figure out what is the pathway to get that accomplished. And if you've got one side, the UK, that's basically saying, yes, we're very happy to do all these things. Nobody in the UK is saying, no, we don't want a zero for zero tariff deal. And your obstacle is Brussels. Then you should focus all of your lobbying attention on Brussels, because that's the gate through which this, you know, can be resolved. And if, you know, significant numbers of European businesses and farmers, and also European consumers who are going to be hurt a lot if we don't get these interim measures, are picking up the phone to their governments and to the European Commission, then I'm sure we'll get a very positive result, and we'll get it quite quickly.
Steering onto a slightly separate subject, ICC's Trade Matters campaign aims to reclaim the narrative on the importance of free trade globally. Indeed, we've seen growing protectionism in recent years, in part intensified by a number of myths surrounding global trade. What's your view on this?
Well, I think this is an incredibly important dynamic around the world now, this growing, you know, nationalism and protectionism and so forth. And I think what is happening, and this is partly reflected by my work in the US. I spent 23 years in the US, and I was a senior trade advisor to Mitt Romney in 08 and 12 and Marco Rubio in 16. And so I think what's happening in the US particularly, but also in Western Europe, in the UK and other countries, is a reaction against free trade. And what people are saying is that somehow the economic game is rigged against them. Some, they don't know how or why, but somehow it's rigged against them. And there's some truth in that. And I think that the what we need to focus on is free traders, those who advocate free trade, have done a pretty good job about talking about border barriers and reducing border barriers. But what we've not done a good job on is explaining to people that we actually have policies to reduce behind the border barriers. And what happens with behind the border barriers is you get, you know, for example, if your steel mill that you were employed by closes down, and it closes down because of China overcapacity of steel production, because of distortions in the China market, because the government has given a state-owned company free water and free land and free energy and so on. We need to be able to say to the steel worker who's just lost his job, we have a method of protecting you from the distortions in the other country. Because if we don't, we're merely importing that distortion into our own market. While at the same time saying that free trade is good because it means your clothes are cheaper, your food is cheaper, you are a consumer, you're benefiting in all these ways. But we have to talk to people both as their consumer role, which we've done, you know, free traders tend to talk about that all the time, and also their role as an employee in a producer. And we've got to be able to do both of those things. So instead of saying free trade is good, clothes are cheaper, food is cheaper, there are winners and losers, tough, which has been the sort of message before, we need to also be able to say the first three of those things: free trade is good, clothes are cheaper, food is cheaper, there are winners and losers in trade, but we will also have trade policy tools that will protect you from distortion, and we will have mechanisms to lower distortion around the world. This is why what Britain is going through with Brexit is so important, because if we are able to use the fact that our biggest interest is in reduction of distortions, because that's what particularly affects services trade. If we're able to use that need, that urgency that we have to reduce distortions, to lower distortions, we're of course reducing them around the world for everyone. And that will lead to a much bigger global gain. And that will offset some of these fears about trade and globalization. And it will then start to eliminate, you know, some of the voices that are calling so strongly for protectionism. So one of the things we have to do is clarify what does fair trade mean. When Wilbur Ross or Donald Trump or Robert Lighthizer, the new US trade representative, talk about fair trade, I would submit that what they're talking about is trade that is free. In other words, tariff, border barriers are reduced. And domestic distortions in countries around the world are also reduced. That is fair trade. Unfair trade is where you might reduce the border measures, but do nothing about the distortions. And I think if that's where this debate goes, it's a very positive result. If it goes into, you know, we need to erect the barriers because we just don't like competition. I think that would be a very negative result, and it will take a lot of gains off the table.
Definitely. And lastly, if not Brexit, what do you consider the biggest threat to the UK business environment?
A bad Brexit, in other words, a Brexit that doesn't maximise the opportunities and doesn't minimise the disruptions, is a huge threat to UK businesses. That's why it's so important to ensure that we're not in the customs union or the EEA, and we're not in those even in the interim period, because other countries are looking at us, and if they say that, you know, we haven't got the authority to do these things, and we also cannot do them internally and unilaterally from day one of Brexit, then that's going to imperil the whole project, and so that's very, very important. Beyond that, it's, you know, we can do a lot of things unilaterally to improve our business environment and to improve our overall investment environment. There are a number of areas where you have to ask yourself, a good business environment, a good investment environment, frankly a good economic environment, is an environment where trade is open, competition on the merits is the organising economic principle, and property rights are protected. And so you have to ask yourself, in various sectors of the UK economy, is that true? Is that working? And we're actually looking at some key sectors, key sort of input markets like land, energy, labour, and banking, which is really about, you know, cost of capital. To ask the question: Is competition really working in those markets? If it's not, why is it not? And what can we do about it? Now, some of these things we can do right now that actually, you know, Europe has nothing to do with these things. We can actually improve our environment right now. We should be doing that. One of the things I think Brexit has done is it's caused people to ask the question, okay, so 2 years' time we're out of Europe, how will we have an economy that's sort of match fit for global competition? We've sort of been sheltered inside this customs union for quite a long time. Now we're going to have to be match fit for global competition. Do we have the economy, the economic, the regulatory system that delivers that? One of the things that we've done a lot of work on is this issue of competition inside the border. And there are countries like Australia and New Zealand have productivity commissions that look at new regulation as it's promulgated, and they ask the question, is this competitive? Is this regulation going to substantially lessen competition? Is it going to cause people to exit the market, which means price will go up or capacity will go down? If that's the case, let's reconsider whether this is in fact the best way of achieving the regulatory goal. These are the kinds of conversations we need to be having as we promote regulation and law. And we don't really do that now. So a lot of legislation and regulation is very knee-jerk response to a particular problem. And sometimes it's not the right approach, and sometimes it is quite damaging for the economic environment.
Great. Thank you, Shankar. You've been listening to the World Business Podcast from ICC United Kingdom.